Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. I want to just fair warning out front. I've got the flu. It's like the fifth time I've been sick in 5 months, or fifth time in 6 months. Daycare germs are real, people. That's what I have to tell America. So please bear with me today as best I can. And just to make matters worse, really, and I'm not looking for sympathy, but just, you know, to tell the story, I was in Vegas all weekend and mostly in bed, you know, sick in bed on, vacation. So, and joining us, both guys in Los Angeles who were at the Warriors-Lakers game last night, we've got our Warriors man on the ground who might as well just be our Warriors in L.A. man on the ground, because Nick Friedell, you've been in L.A. for like a week.
This is like the best road trip of all time. We got here Thursday. They instead of flying back and forth from Oakland, the Warriors decided they'd just stay. They'd make it a family trip. A lot of guys brought their families. Klay Thompson brought his dog, Rocco, for the first time.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Rocco's going to make every road trip.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, I mean, he should be all over the place now because, I mean, Klay is just shooting out of his mind, as was the case on Monday. But it's been a fun experience for the Warriors to have this whole group here, and it's been a good trip. Steve Kerr pointed out the other day Draymond Green got engaged over the weekend, so congrats to Draymond.
Wow.
So it's just there's been a lot going on for a Warriors group that is playing the best.
Will Kevin Durant
played all year.
Will Kevin Durant be the best man? Is that too easy of a joke? Too easy.
The weirdest part, though, as we finish on this road trip thing, they have one more day in L.A. and then they fly to D.C. and they go D.C. Boston Indy and then fly home. So this is a little break, a little respite.
One of the reasons, though, is because these are all made-for-TV stuff, because like, we're getting into the made-for-TV games now. So the reason they had the weekend off was because they had to set up the Martin Luther King Day game, and the reason they're getting shipped out to Boston so fast is because ABC Saturday Night. Not to pull back the curtain, but that's what's going on. So am I to believe that Rocco just, like, bounced up the stairs to the team plane and flew on the team plane, right?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, oh. I think Klay probably carried him up those stairs, but hey.
Well, right. He's a bulldog. It's a long walk for a bulldog.
How about on Friday night prior to the Clippers game, we're standing there in Staples, and there's a service bulldog that his parents are holding a sign, and it says, "Hello, Rocco Thompson, I want to be your friend."
Oh, my God, amazing.
That was my first experience seeing any dog, any bulldog, especially in an NBA game, so just fun all over the place for the Warriors this week.
I haven't introduced our other man on the scene, Dave McMenamin. Now, Dave wasn't in L.A. when you got there last week, because Dave is one of the most loyal fans to his teams that I've ever seen. And he does crazy stuff to be able to go to be able to go to games. And I think this qualifies as crazy. Like when he went to the Eagles Super Bowl last year, that was it was a tough to slip in and out, but at the same time, it was a Super Bowl. Last week, what did you do for a one-day trip, Dave McMenamin?
The Lakers played the Cavs, 6:30 Sunday game. I got a 11:30 p.m. red eye from L.A.
We're already on an insane level here. This is already insane.
L.A. to Atlanta, Atlanta to Raleigh-Durham. I landed at Raleigh-Durham about 10 a.m., got to hotel by 10:30, and 7:30 that night, Syracuse versus Duke, taking down the number one team in the country. And it was honestly one of the best live sporting events I've ever attended, and obviously through work, there's so many we get to go to, and we're fortunate for that, but this was six rows behind the Duke bench, got tickets through a connection through Duke, and the instruction was with me and three of my crazy buddies from college. Here, you know, you're welcome to these tickets, but you can't wear any Syracuse stuff.
Oh.
And breaking that news to this group of Yahoos that I spend time with was like trying to tell them that, like, you aren't allowed to breathe. And, it was, we had to do some negotiating. Basically, the final, result was we're going to Trojan horse it. You know, you can wear some orange under a button-down shirt.
I see.
And we'll kind of test out the crowd and see how this looks. I think part of the reason that those instructions were handed down, though, is Coach K has a lot of control in that arena.
Oh, really?
In Cameron Indoor Stadium. To the point where you can't, during timeouts, you know, people take out their cell phones and they want to take pictures of the huddle or videos of the huddle. And there are about 7 or 8 monitors that are scanning the crowd behind the Duke bench. And they are, you know, making eye contact and waving at you and telling you to put your phone down. And I assume if people didn't receive that instruction by, you know, just tacitly agreeing and putting the phone in their pocket, there would be further force to take their phone away. But really, we were in eyesight, I guess, of Mike Krzyzewski, and, you know, all he sees is a sea of blue behind him, and then there's, like, little peaks of orange
from me
and my band of merry men.
I know. It's nothing goes Duke's way. I understand why they have to try to do everything they can.
I know you love the Duke's program.
You know, Mike Krzyzewski has done nothing but treat me wonderfully over the years. I've only covered him. I've covered a couple of Duke games. But generally I've always just covered him as Team USA. He's been awesome to me on a personal level. I have nothing but good things to say about working with the man. Nonetheless, I hate Duke. So I don't know what to say. I don't know what to tell you. So what I am amazed by this, Dave, is that this wasn't like a game that you had a reasonable thought that you guys would win. Wasn't like you guys were, and Nick and Dave both went to Syracuse. It's not like, you know, you guys were 13-1 and, like, you know, this, you know, you could have gone there and seen your team get beat by 17 just as easily. So that's
17,
what
I think, was
by.
Actually the line, which is funny
God.
That you choose that number. So there you go, Mr. Vegas. We made the plans this summer. Like, there's only so many games left that Mike Krzyzewski and Jim Boeheim will be coaching against one
that's
another.
That's true.
You know, we're in the, you know, less than 10 territory. And knowing that, obviously, we knew Duke was going to have this juggernaut this year because of the recruiting class, but Syracuse coming off the Sweet 16, getting Elijah Hughes coming in, Tyus Battle returning to school, the thought going into the year is that we would be a top 10 team as well. We're just taking a little bit longer to prove our mettle. But there was some confidence that we had going into the game.
Yeah, that's true. I did talk to...
This is the
maximum allowed
college basketball talk.
We are talking we're about guys who will be
drafted. You know NBA fans? You know NBA fans also like college basketball, Andrew?
Yeah, no, well, they don't. I did not know that. That's not true at all.
Anyway, so I'll just sum this up real quick. Nick gave me money. When he heard I was going to Vegas, Nick gave me money. He said, I want you to bet on Syracuse. And then he later texted me and said, I don't like the Syracuse line. It's too much, so bet on Duke. Duke's not losing 2 straight home games.
Oh,
and I
my
go,
Nick,
God, Nick. I go,
are you serious?
I go, Nick,
yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Think I can actually. Yeah. Well, they didn't lose, Dave.
Nick,
they
that's
won.
Disgusting.
And I said, I think I just got to send the money back because I don't think I can bet on Duke. And then we had the worst. We saw the worst maybe beat of the year where it was a 3.5 point spread. And I know that we're not talking about lines, Andrew. I'm sorry, but it was a 3.5 point spread. Virginia is down 4 with like six seconds left. The game's over. And Virginia shoots like a meaningless 17 footer. They don't even shoot a 3. I'm not even 100% certain that he got the shot off. But it goes in like after the buzzer. And they don't review it because what's the difference? So Virginia loses by 2, not 4, and Nick loses his money. And I probably should have just stuck by my guns and told Nick I wouldn't lay down a bet for Duke.
The best part of the whole thing is that I'm in an Uber going to Santa Monica because I've stopped watching. It's too close, and I'm like, I got to go meet a buddy. I'm going to go to dinner. So B and I are texting back and forth.
Final play by play. I was in bed sick during
like so many people watching this game all across America. And he, B goes, okay, he made the first one, missed on the second one. And I'm thinking, just missed the shot and this thing's over. Four, got it. And about 3 seconds go by. And my car is speeding to Santa Monica, and I get, oh no, with 6 exclamation points. And the voice really I hear bad. In my head is that Michael Kay sounder that they play on SVP during Bad Beats and other segments. And I hear, oh no.
Oh my God. It was
takes
bad.
The shot, and I'm just shaking my head laughing in the car.
It was
goodbye,
bad.
$80. It was nice knowing
it was
you.
Bad. All right, so you guys saw, I don't know, was it an interesting game last night? It was interesting to watch Clay. Clay had started the game. I don't even say started. That implies that it was only happening at the start. Clay made his first 10 threes. It was something like his, 10th 20-point quarter of his career. Was that the second quarter or the third quarter when he scored over 20?
Third
quarter. And the fact that he's done it so many times in his career is just really ridiculous. And we saw – and this is, again, it's scary. It wasn't even full power Warriors. Like, I know that everybody was like, well, this is what happens when you've got a team full of all-stars. And I'm like, actually, it's not what happens because Durant and Curry weren't even really great last night. I mean, they were good. The team played well. But – they even have more room to go from there. Nick, this is, what are we even doing here? Why don't we all just shut it down and come back in the summer when we find out where Durant's going?
I agree. I agree. David and I were talking about this after the game. I mean, this team, when they are healthy and they're playing with the confidence that they showed, frankly, in both games of this trip, so far in L.A. at Staples, nobody is going to beat them flatly. There is not a team, in my opinion, that can beat this team 4 out of 7. And I think Cousins' arrival has only given them more confidence. And it's not to say that he's not going to have games where he struggles as he makes his way back from the Achilles injury, but he's a stabilizing presence. And there's no telling just how good they can be when he feels like he's found a rhythm. And they feel as a group like they're playing very well together. I mean, this is game two of the sports experiment here with Boogie back on the floor. So I am completely in the camp that believes we could shut it down. We could wake everybody up when Kevin's ready to make his decision in early July about whether he's staying or going, wherever he's going. And go on with our lives, because this group, when they're all firing and they're all playing like this, there is nobody who is going to come close to where they're at.
So the thought I had when I was driving downtown to the game yesterday was, should this team, when healthy, if they stay healthy the remainder of the season, win at a 73-9 clip or better? And should that be the reasonable expectation? And should they lose their mind when they don't? And my conclusion is absolutely yes, they should. And I am curious, because they went 73-9 and lost the big prize in the finals, whether they just don't look at things that way anymore. But if I'm, the owners, Lakeham and Gruber, putting that team together, I would expect that team to just manhandle the league the rest of the way.
So this is the thing about Cousins, and I think this is like one of the only things I could see as causing an issue really at all, and I don't expect it to happen. But they don't need Cousins to be great. Like, they don't need him to average and I'm not even going to go crazy. They don't even need him to average 17-10. If he just has a 17-10 game every now and then, like, and especially if it happens to be needed, that's their redundancy. What I call their margin for error is ridiculous, and so this is why the Cousins pickup was so remarkable. Not because I think that we're going to see Cousins at full force, and we're going to see a team that wins games 215 to 105. But because the expectation level here is that he just helps them win, in my mind, two playoff games that they may have lost because they get dominated by a big man. And I bring up a game like a Steven Adams game where Adams would maybe go for 20 and 20 because they don't have a big before Boogie. And he's neutralized, you know, he does that and it's a success. And the only way that could become an issue is if Boogie gets frustrated because he is a role player and he wants to remind everybody that he can be paid a huge contract in the summer. But I only say that as something I'm watching. Again, when Boogie signed with the Warriors, he knew that this was going to be what the deal was. And again, even like Draymond's having a rough year shooting the ball. It's like the worst offensive year of his career. I don't know. Maybe his numbers are better than when he was a rookie. But when you have this much firepower, you don't even need Draymond to be that good. And that's what I take away from yesterday. I mean, yes, the Lakers are without three important players. But even if the Warriors had just played 30% worse, I mean, let's say that they all have off nights, I still don't think they're losing that game.
Well, they're not.
30% worse plus LeBron, Rondo, and Lonzo, you're saying?
Well, no, I'm just saying, you know.
Okay, all right.
My point is, like, it's not – it's just their cushion – is just obscene. And, you know, this is what people in the league have been complaining about ever since the cap spike. But it is what it is, and this is what we have in front of us. And short of injury, I mean, like if you're LeBron James, Dave, okay, and obviously this groin injury is dragging way out, and does it sound to you like he's even going to come back Thursday against the Wolves?
No. No, if I was going to give you $80 to bet in Vegas, I would bet against him playing.
I know, and Nick's a high roller at $80.
Yeah, let the record show I cleaned out my wallet. That was all that was left. It would have been way more, but that's what I am.
Andrew Hahn, who's a high roller, he rolled his eyes at $80. like, if you're LeBron, right, and you are looking at this team in front of you, and I've seen this stuff on Twitter today with – you know, LeBron sort of making these faces as Clay was hitting all these threes. LeBron's been on some pretty damn dominant teams in his career. He was on a team that once won 27 straight games. So it's not like he hasn't been on the other side of this. But if you're LeBron, Dave, and you're sitting there and you're like, I gotta, you know, really make this injury, you know, make sure I'm right. Like, I'm seeing that out there. Like, I'm rushing back or trying to get back to try to get into eighth place to see this in the first round. I mean, I think that game, if I'm LeBron, I just took another extra week off to rest my groin there.
Well, listen, I don't think that's the way he would look at this. Whether it feels like he's 100% tomorrow, he's going to play on Thursday. We don't think that he does feel that way, so that's what's going to govern his decision, not what he saw out of the Warriors. The thing, though, that's interesting about this is that, you know, Rich Paul told Chris Broussard last week that if it was the playoffs, LeBron would be playing. Well, guess what? There will be no playoffs unless he starts playing soon. So I think there has to be some sort of pressure here, seeing that the team has gone 5-9 in his absence. At the same time, though, if he comes back and re-injures himself, and a groin injury is one of those injuries that can be lingering, then it's all for naught, and this season becomes even more of a disaster. And so you have to err on the side of caution, and, you know, if it's not even Sunday against the Suns, you know, you just keep buying time. Because when he comes back, he needs to be ready for a, you know, treacherous stretch run. Because there's another thing. The Lakers' schedule is backloaded. It's a lot harder in the second half of the season than in the first half. There you go.
For TV. So I actually, you know, it was a very inspiring road trip for the Lakers. They won in Oklahoma City and played. They were going to win in Houston until Lonzo sprained his ankle. And let me just say that if Lonzo Ball is back in 4 weeks with a grade 3 strain, he will have accomplished something amazing. Grade 3 sprains I mean, and I'll, you know, you have to say every ankle injury is different. Lonzo's ball ankle is different than Reggie Jackson's ankle. Reggie Jackson had a grade 3 sprain last year, and I think he missed 12 weeks. Doesn't mean that's what Lonzo will miss, but, you know, they announced 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, they also announced LeBron will be day-to-day, okay? But, you know, had Lonzo not sprained his ankle badly, the Lakers probably win that game in Houston. They are there is some good stuff happening with the Lakers, but they're so injury ravaged that they've just had no chance, Dave, to get any sort of traction all season.
No, absolutely not. I mean, if it wasn't injury, it was a suspension from the home opener dealing with Rondo and Brandon Ingram. And, you know, last night I wrote about Rondo returning, potentially. It seems like Thursday against the Wolves is going to be the day. He's only played in 14 of the 48 games they played so far this year. I mean, and that was their, outside of LeBron, their marquee signee. I mean, $9 million right. contract, the second most money they doled out this summer beyond KCP, but KCP was a holdover. You know, that hurts your team tremendously, especially when you're talking about a second-year player being your starting point guard, and then now you take away that starting point guard. I mean, the one thing I think this does is it has to thrust them into the trade market even sooner than the February 7th trade deadline, because they need help in that position. Alex Caruso played last night. I know he helped them out a little bit last year as their backup, mostly a G League player. And Brandon Ingram can play point. But, you know, knowing the way the West is, if you have a bad week and now you're out of the playoff picture, to me, this just signals that we should be ready to see this roster being shaken up.
Right, and this is why it's laughable that they would sign Melo. I mean, and real quick, and I'm talking, you know, you guys are Syracuse guys. I mean, I know you guys are objective in covering the league, but the Lakers cannot sign Carmelo Anthony, right? I mean, we all understand that, right?
Well, for absolutely what?
Thank you, Nick.
Right. They've struggled to score when LeBron's out, but when LeBron's back, I don't see a role for Melo. And if there isn't a role for Melo, what's the point of him being there? Because that was part of the problem with him being in Houston, that it didn't seem like he was comfortable being a guy who could get a PCD. So I don't necessarily see the fit. I'm not saying anything obvious here. The bigger thing is that, you know, LeBron James is a player who wields his power willingly. I've seen it. You know, I saw him clamor for Joe Johnson a couple years ago with the Cavs. He hasn't done that with Carmelo. He said all the right things when he's asked about him in Brooklyn, because they're longtime friends. But, you know, LeBron knows how to drop the hammer. If he really wanted Carmelo Anthony desperately for this roster, he would make it happen. That hasn't happened yet. To me, that's a telling sign.
Nick, you can't, you know, you can't, right? No way.
What's he going to offer at this point? I mean, I love Carmelo. Having watched him all those years since college, but he's just not that good anymore.
I mean, are there people out there who think he can help a team? Or does everybody, all the listeners to this podcast who are NBA savvy, do they know that he's done? Do they know? Or do I need to keep, Andrew, do I need to keep talking about this? That he's now been traded to be waived twice in like 6 months?
The Bull. Carmelo the Bull. Yeah.
I mean, we'll definitely see Carmelo Anthony Bull jerseys and Hawks jerseys at Coachella this year. That's for sure.
And Lala. But B, I want to go back real quick to something you were saying about LeBron sitting there watching the game on the bench and going, all right, you know, maybe I sit for another week. As I watch LeBron sitting there at Staples, having watched him from a distance for all these years in the East, and dominating for so long, all that keeps running through my head is, I can't believe that LeBron redshirted this season, going to a team that, while they had some positives, they weren't going to win a title unless they made another move. But then the secondary thought, and this is something that all three of us have discussed for the entire season, is, okay, well, we know that the Lakers supporting cast is not good enough presently to go get a title, even with everybody healthy and LeBron playing at an extremely high level. What happens if the Lakers don't go and get Kawhi, KD, or one of those top tier guys, or Anthony Davis doesn't land there somehow. I mean, this is a group right now with LeBron starting to have injuries that are taking longer to heal. I just couldn't believe, one, that he would go to a situation that wasn't ready-made to go back to the finals.
What else could he have done, though, Nick? I mean, that's the reality, right? What was his other option?
Right, and that's the key is he has his own right to, if his family's comfortable and he's ready to move to L.A., great. That's great. But don't try to sell me on, oh, yeah, this young Lakers supporting cast, they just need a little more seasoning and they're going to be there. I mean, that group, those guys, the Ingrams, the Balls, they're just not as good. Kuzma, I mean, he's a nice player, but Dave wrote a story about this a couple weeks ago. Is he a number two guy on a title team with LeBron? No, he's not. So you have all these different pieces that are there, but none of them are good enough for LeBron and the level at which he's used to playing. So could he have stayed in Cleveland another year? I mean, you know, this is all revisionist history. Who knows?
That's going but great in Cleveland. It's going wonderful.
Well, exactly. But the reality is that all these years of watching LeBron just dominate and either get to the finals, win a finals, win several finals in Miami, to see him sitting there looking at his future with some of these pieces he'll be playing with later this year and into next year, I'm sitting there going, oh, man, have we gotten to a point where he's starting to feel a little panic about it better work this summer and they better make the right move, because if not, Golden State, whether they lose KD or not, they're still going to be right there in that conversation, and I take them certainly over where the Lakers are at in the moment.
But, Nick, here's why this is a disingenuous thought exercise. We already established in this conversation that the Warriors are going to win it all. No one can compete with them. So that's the baseline.
If they stay
healthy.
Right.
If they stay healthy. So he wasn't going to win a title anywhere he went in this quote-unquote redshirt year. Because we've already established.
But he's not close. That, I think that the gap between
how can
I
you
thought
say
he
that?
Would be.
What, the gap between based on last night?
No, not just like throughout the season. I mean, I've never gotten the sense, and granted, I'm not around the Lakers day to day, but I have never gotten the sense watching them from a distance that they were that, forget the Warriors, that they were that close to the real upper echelon of the West.
But what is upper echelon of the West? I mean, they've beaten Denver. They've beaten Golden State Warriors. They beat OKC. I mean, without LeBron. So, like, what? How are you saying they're not close to upper echelon in the West?
Because they don't have that other piece in a playoff series that would make me feel confident that they're going to be able to do anything.
I mean, I know
they're
someone
so heavily on LeBron and need to with the roster in place that I just don't see enough moving forward. I mean, that's the key. It's like, okay, they've had some nice games and some nice moments, certainly, but this team, when you're playing for keeps, as he always does through the years, he needs a second guy, a third guy, and I'm watching the rest of the roster and I'm going, where are they? Like, where? I thought all these guys were supposed to be that much better. I thought they were supposed to take the proverbial leap under LeBron's watchful eye, and none of these guys, as I watch them, they're nice players, but none of them are to the level in a playoff series that would give me the confidence that this group is going to be able to take some next step with just them later this year and into next year, unless they get that superstar piece from somewhere else.
I mean, I think obviously everyone in LA wants that superstar piece, and they would empty the cupboard to get Anthony Davis, and maybe very well likely they will. But to say that these guys don't have that ability when they're being asked to be the number one, number two piece, you know, they will work with this group when LeBron is there being the best player in the world. And then, you know, then Kuzma can slip in as a two, and Ingram can slip in as a three, and Lonzo as a four, et cetera, et cetera. When there's no LeBron, I mean, what are we talking about here? I mean, I just don't, you know, I know there's someone who's been a regular guest on the Hoop Collective who thinks Kyle Kuzma can't shoot. I won't say any names, but Kyle Kuzma can shoot. That guy can put a bucket. I've been simmering on that point.
So I'm just going to say that our plan is to get Tim Bontemps and Dave McMenamin in the same room at All-Star
Weekend
to do another podcast. But it was funny last week. Bontemps went on a jag about how Kuzma can't shoot. Cause I said, Kuzma's having a good year. And he's like, he's shooting 29% from three. And then Kuzma like made like eight of his next 10 threes. This is what you guys are debating is what I have branded the Lakers' cone of uncertainty. The Lakers, from my viewpoint, could absolutely get LeBron back, start playing like the team that was on Christmas Day more often and that just played on this road trip, wiggle their way into sixth place. It's not that far out of their reach. Have LeBron have one of his playoff series, knock off the Denver Nuggets or something like that, and be sitting there in the second round laughing at everybody. And while that won't be a championship season, it would be a humongous step forward for the franchise. Just as realistically, it could go the other direction. The Lakers could miss the playoffs, and it could be mocked. And this is why we're going to have to watch this play out. And I think for somebody like Dave, Nick, who has watched LeBron pull stuff out of his you-know-where in the past, I can kind of say I understand why he says that, because, I mean, I can remember, you know, they don't have Kevin Love. Kyrie Irving is dragging his leg up the court. You were there. The Bulls are ahead in a game in Chicago about to go up 3-1. If I had told you that not only are the Cavs going to win that series 4-2, but are then going to go ahead and end up being ahead in the finals 2-1, you'd have told me I was out of my mind. At the same time, Dave, Nick, I'm losing my own game here. At the same time, Dave, Nick's point is what a lot of rational basketball people would look at the Lakers and see. And they would point to the statistics and say that, you know, Kuzma's three-point shooting has been inconsistent at best. They would say that Ingram hasn't gone well. And I'm just here to say, I don't know. We'll have to watch. I will say this about LeBron's decision last summer. LeBron is one of the things he's said to Dave a lot of times. He said to me, he said to other people, you always keep basketball the main thing. It's a Pat Riley line. You always keep the main thing the main thing. LeBron makes basketball decisions first. That said, he did schedule to shoot Space Jam this summer because he knew this summer was going to be his first in 9 years where he wasn't going to have to play in the finals. I think that's just being honest. Okay, now, Dave, your thoughts on that?
It's a good point. There are people.
Did I just mediate LeBron this? Or no?
That was a good point. That was a good point about the Space Jam. Like, those facts are facts. And again, maybe these people have witnessed the same LeBron phenomena so many times that they are drinking the Kool-Aid. But there are still people who say this Lakers team, all they have to do is beat the Warriors and they're in the finals. There's no other team in the West. No other team in the West that scares them. Whether that's rational or not, all I can tell you is that those conversations I've had.
I mean, if you're LeBron, who are you afraid? You're not afraid of anybody if you're LeBron, other than the Warriors.
And confidence is, you know, that's the biggest X factor in basketball. Biggest X factor in life. Confidence. And so, you know.
Dave's preaching, Nick.
Dave's autobiography has just been named Mr. Windhurst. I love it.
Yeah, we won't go into any more than that, but that's a key tenet in Dave's life, what he just
absolutely,
said.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, the only thing, though, the only thing I'm thinking as we talk through all the steps here is that when LeBron signed in L.A., whether they got that second star or not, nobody knew what was going to happen in the moment. What we were all sold on as basketball fans was that the Lonzos and the Kuzmas and the Ingrams would be that much better under LeBron's tutelage and being around him, and they would take another step. In my opinion, having watched the Lakers a few times live this season and watched their progression throughout the year, I don't see that from any of those three guys. I don't see them being good enough either in a secondary role to LeBron as that number two guy, but even as the rest of the pieces on a title roster in a conference with the Warriors. Those guys are okay players. They've had very good moments at times. If it's me building a team, none of the three of those guys are guys that I'm sold on being potential superstar players down the line. And that, for me, as I've watched LeBron both in the first Cleveland run, in Miami, back in the second Cleveland run, he's used to playing with superstar talents around him no matter where else he is. And as I watch the Lakers now, I go, they better get this deal done somewhere this summer or make some kind of trade on the horizon, because this team
doesn't have LeBron
from 3 or 4 years ago, like the Miami series you're talking about with the Bulls. They have LeBron now, and that's a different player.
You're right. But I'm going to say, LeBron doesn't really care about any of his teammates. He'll swap them all out. You know, like, he may be friends with guys in the moment. Like, he may say, hey, come over to my house. We're going to have a party. Hey, I'll get you into this club. I'll get you great seats at this game. Hey, we're going to take my private plane out and watch this playoff game or whatever. But, like, when push comes to shove, he's going to send flowers. Like, he basically walked out on Dwayne Wade. And I know I've come back to this over and over and over, but Dwayne Wade's one of his closest friends in the world. When he thought Dwayne had turned the corner a little bit, he's like, all right, I'll see you. Good luck, Dwayne. And, you know, he'll do it to anybody. So, like, he looks at his teammates right now. He doesn't have affinity for any of them. He'll swap any of them out. And he's, you know, he's making two wagers. One, other people are going to want to come to play in L.A., and the Lakers will figure it out, and they'll get people in. And two, that the Warriors are going to break up. Because even if the Lakers don't sign Kevin Durant, if Kevin Durant leaves the Warriors, and especially if he leaves the Warriors and, like, goes to the East, that plays into every team in the West, and especially the Lakers' hands. So he is also making a long-term play. And I think that all he really had on his plate were long-term plays. He did get asked, Dave, am I right, when he was in Philly, didn't he get asked about how serious Philly was under consideration?
Yeah, we weren't in Philly. I'm trying to think where it was, but
was it Brooklyn?
Yeah,
maybe?
Maybe it was Brooklyn. Yeah, I mean, he offered the platitudes that but basically he dismissed Houston flat out. When in the past he has said that Houston he gave some consideration to. Philly, I think it got, you know, the requisite. Yeah, it was a team I was thinking about, but it didn't seem like it was.
Philly got a quote unquote meeting with Rich Paul. I mean, they got the meeting because Rich Paul represents Ben Simmons. I mean, they didn't get a meeting with LeBron. And I think if anything, Rich Paul was like, well, let me hear what your future plans are for the organization while I've got my guy here. Because you could make the case that Philly, like, if he wanted to go compete instantaneously, Philly was where to go. The other team, by the way, that was desperate, they just wanted to get a chance to be in front of him for 20 minutes. And they pulled every string they possibly could, and they were so frustrated that he wouldn't even give them 20 minutes, was the Denver Nuggets. Now, I want you to think about what LeBron would be like on the Denver Nuggets. And what would be happening with that team right now. And so, you know, so when you say, Nick, that how could he expect, you know, that his expectations aren't met, well, I would say that he had other avenues. And by the way, LeBron has a genuine friendship with the owner of the Nuggets, Josh Kroenke. And like, even
but he would trade Josh Kroenke for another owner in a second.
Clearly he would. because when it came to business, he was like, I love you, Josh. I love using your yacht, but I'm not giving you 20 minutes. I'm not doing it. And like I said, when it comes, you know, I don't remember what movie I'm stealing this from, but when it comes, push comes to shove, send flowers. That's the way LeBron is always going to be, except for his family And the guys, you know, Maverick, LeBron, Randy, those, like, his absolute core of the guys who's been with him for 20, 25 years, if you're outside that core, when it all comes down, he's, you know, he's going to do what's best for LeBron first. And so, you know, he really made his wager on the long term because he had other short term options and he passed on them. And so really we won't know how LeBron's decision works out until next year. Right now, like I said, we're at the start, we're all just killing time till the Warriors have a decision on where their future is.
Brian.
Yeah, trade deadline in 2020.
We have to kill some time. We have to kill some time now. Pause for commercials on some platforms, and while we're waiting for that to roll, Nick, can you tell us that story about that field trip you took in Detroit many years ago?
And so she spit the dollar on the floor, and I raced to the bathroom and scrubbed my hand three different times.
Oh, my God.
And we're back.
Oh, my God. That's just Nick. I don't even know. I don't even want to continue, to be honest with you. I just love this guy, Dave. I just love this guy. He took so much joy in Coolio performing at the Clipper game the other night, and I appreciated it as a fan of Coolio in the 90s. I just loved that. I loved that so much that Nick.
The amazing part is. The people who took more joy out of it than Nick was the two people that in the video are just enraptured, staring at him with this befuddled smile on their face.
I know. They love it.
Is this really happening? Is this?
It's on Nick's Twitter if you want to go find it. Yeah. So yesterday was a jam full day in the NBA. And a couple of things that I think we should be watching other than the Lakers and Warriors. So the Pelicans are in a critical moment right now. Anthony Davis is out 1 to 2 weeks with a finger injury, but I'm going to be honest. It could be more. And he's going to go see a specialist, I think, this week. And it's an outside specialist. It's not the team specialist or whoever he saw with the team. And it's possible that that injury could last longer. And how the team performs in the interim, this could be vital. Because what the Pelicans are hoping is what the Lakers are hoping, which is that they get everybody back, they put it all together, and they make a run, just like they did last year. And all of a sudden, they're a relevant team that's competitive, make it to the second round. And now, Anthony Davis has a different mindset when the summer comes. I know that they're really in a tough spot here. They're under 500. Their schedule's been brutal. They're digging a bigger hole by the day, but that's what their hope is. And the thing about the NBA is its length of games and schedules and playoff series makes it the most forgiving of the pro sports. And so they're trying and hoping. But right now is a vital moment for them to salvage this. And they took yesterday go into Memphis on Martin Luther King Day, and I know Memphis is no great shakes, and they win by 20. And I'm just going to say, these next 7 to 10 days for the Pelicans, and it's not that I think that Anthony Davis would get traded before this trade deadline. I don't think that's happening. In fact, the Saints ownership that also owns the Pelicans is so mad about this pass interference, no call. I mean, Gail Benson's put out like a 500-word statement. Like, I don't even know if it's within their bandwidth right now, honestly, to deal with the Anthony Davis situation before February 7th. So it's just not going to happen. But in terms of salvaging this season, if they have a bad couple of weeks and then Anthony Davis has to shut it down for a month and ends all their hopes for this season, like, this is really, really important. And I will put forth that the win that they had yesterday in Memphis, which probably passed a lot of radars, it happened in the middle of the day, was one of the most important wins in recent Pelicans history. It won't matter if they lose their next four, but they're coming out of a rough part of the schedule. Nick, do you think that this Pelicans team still has a chance to salvage this with your old friend Nico Mirotić.
Nico time is alive and well, B, but the answer to your question is hell no. Hell no. We started the podcast discussing, you know, let's just all go take a nap until July, and we'll go watch another Warriors parade in Oakland, and they'll have a nice send-off to Oracle. Why are we all not taking the same nap and waking up when Anthony Davis lands wherever he's going to land next? Is there a person out there, anywhere, not in the New Orleans Pelicans organization, who actually believes that Anthony Davis is going to stay in New Orleans long term? Is there anyone out there that believes that?
Is there anyone on this podcast out there who believes it?
Hell.
No, sir.
No. Yeah.
So why don't we just hit the fast forward button? Because New Orleans is going nowhere fast. They don't have enough around him. I mean, it's the same old story as it's ever been. Anthony Davis hasn't shown he can stay healthy to a point where you're like, okay, like maybe he can make it work with this group that he's got in place. They had a nice little story last season where they go past Portland and then they get drilled by Golden State. But to me, guys, tying together several topics that we've gone through here, if Anthony Davis doesn't end up in L.A. with LeBron, I'm not sure who's going to end up on the Lakers with LeBron. Because KD might leave, but I don't believe he'd go to the Lakers. And with Kawhi, I mean, who knows? I don't know. But if it's not Davis as that secondary superstar piece, I don't see it. But as far as the Pelicans go, they could win a few, they could lose a few. I don't think that changes the overall narrative, which is Anthony Davis's days on that team in that city are numbered.
I have two thoughts on that game against Memphis in particular. One, everybody's beaten Memphis. They've lost 13 out of 14.
That's fair.
Two, Jahlil Okafor, give him a round of applause. Guy steps in 20 and 10, 9 for 11 from the field. But the problem with that is he's not going to help Anthony Davis. When Anthony Davis returns, Okafor's not going to play. So I would feel better about that win if Elfrid Payton scored 20 and right. with 10 assists or Etuan Moore. You know, like, so I just don't see this being a period where he's going to feel better about the team that surrounds him.
That's probably true. I will say, though, that it is kind of surprising that this team has not made any sort of roster move this season. And I know that they are very limited in what they can trade, and I know that they've taken some big swings. They tried to get Jimmy Butler. It was, you know, they didn't have a great offer, but I'm just really surprised that they don't if they feel the urgency that they should feel, I just don't think it's shown. And I think that's you know, one of the things I'm taking away from watching this happen, because I can just remember when LeBron in 2009-10, which I think is a reasonable comparison, you know, that Cavs team was pretty good. And they were just desperate to add any possible piece that they could. They were trading off pieces. They did the thing that was now illegal, where they traded a player and then got him to be bought out and re-signed. they were trying to do everything they could. They traded for Shaq the previous offseason, trying to help against Dwight Howard. They traded for Antoine Jameson. I mean, he's obviously, you know, we're not rearranging deck chairs, but they were a 60-win team that never stopped showing desperation. And I don't sense an appropriate amount of desperation. And I don't know, maybe that's because they're like, well, why should we be desperate? He's under contract for another year. You know, he can demand a trade all he wants. We're not trading him. Maybe that's the tack they'll take. But I'm not seeing an appropriate level of fear that I think that just, and I don't mean during this week, but just during this entire time. And maybe it's just because Anthony is such, you know, he is just, you know, all of the talk about Anthony leaving has all been from us. Because we see it and read it so clearly. It, you know, it hasn't been from him. I don't know. I can't really explain it.
I'm just getting worried throughout this whole conversation because one of my very favorite places to go visit is New Orleans. I love that city. I love going out in that city. I've spent thousands of dollars at that Harrah's. Probably are never coming back.
Well, but the city's guys, not going to be there.
Yeah, that's true. But if Davis leaves, and I mean this in all seriousness, if Anthony Davis leaves that team, however he leaves, as a free agent, in a trade, whatever, I mean, the support for that team in that city isn't very good to begin with. If you lose a superstar player in his prime, how much longer is that team going to be there? How much longer is there going to be enough interest to warrant having a franchise in a city that never fully embraced that team to begin with? That's what worries me. I mean, it's even deeper than, is Anthony Davis going to pair up with LeBron? Is he going to go elsewhere? Who knows? But if you take him off that team, how much longer do the Pelicans stay in New Orleans?
Yeah, they're currently, I've just looked it up, they're currently 26th in the league in attendance per game. They're only getting 15 and change for home games with Anthony Davis in his prime. And so I'm with you. Well, it'll be a ghost town.
Yeah, they have some advantages there because they operate the arena. So they are able to bring in some revenue that way. But you know, they're part of a larger umbrella operation. Obviously, it owns the Saints. So they can sort of function as a loss leader. And you can survive that way in the NBA because of the revenue sharing. Like, I don't think they're necessarily, you know, unless Gail Benson decides to sell them, I don't really necessarily think they would ever move. They just will sort of function in this level of mediocrity where they're just, you know, a blip on the radar. So it was a fascinating moment in NBA history. It was a different time then. NBA teams were not anywhere near as valuable. But, you know, their owner essentially went bankrupt, George Shin, and they nationalized the team. The league bought the team from George Shin, which infamously led to the voided Chris Paul trade for basketball reasons by David Stern, who was functioning as the owner at the time, which is, we're not going to go down that path right now. But at the time, there were people, and I think Larry Ellison reportedly was one of them. Larry Ellison was the guy, you know, he owns Oracle, one of the richest men in the world, and he lost the bidding war to Peter Guber and Joe Lacob to buy the Warriors. You think he wishes he would have offered the extra 15 or 20 million now, Nick? The Warriors might be worth 3.5 or 4 billion. Anyway, long story short, David Stern was committed to keeping that team in New Orleans. He could have been willing to let that team move and let Larry Ellison buy them and move them. I think he wanted to move to San Jose. But David Stern kept them there, and they were coming back after the hurricane, and he felt it was important for them to be there. And we've all kind of led to this, which is Anthony Davis, you know, hanging by a thread in this basketball, in this football town that's, you know, second most important thing is LSU football. So I don't know. And I think that's one of the things about, it's not just the Pelicans' ineptitude as an organization, which has one playoff series win since Anthony Davis got there. It's also the fact that how big of a star can he be in New Orleans versus if he goes to a market like Los Angeles or Boston. And I also...
Well, Russell Westbrook says it doesn't matter, Brian.
I know, but that organization is completely run differently. I mean, I know that it's not 1996 anymore, but I don't know. This is a vital few weeks, a vital 2 weeks, I would say, for the Pelicans. And I don't even know if anybody in New Orleans even realizes it, because I'll tell you what, if the Saints had won on Sunday, definitely nobody would have recognized it. I don't even know if they're even aware that Anthony Davis is hurt. And I mean, I kind of get it. It's a Saints town. All right, Nick, you have to leave L.A. I'm so sorry. L.A. is come to an end. Will you be in L.A. for the first round of the playoffs?
Oh, man, the 1-8 series.
We will leave on this. Nick, are the Lakers making the playoffs?
I still believe they are because
I thought Nick's on this podcast, not Tim Bontemps.
Oh.
Yeah, I can't wait for Charlotte now. Oh, I can't wait. But no, I've seen LeBron for way too many years just dominate at various times, and I know he's not the same player he was a few years ago, but he's still an incredible player when he's healthy. So I refuse to believe that with a healthy LeBron, the Lakers are going to slide all the way out of the playoffs. I think they'll be there. I don't think they're going to last long, but I do think they'll be there if he's healthy.
Gaslighting Dave McMenamin? Yes.
One, I believe they're going to make the playoffs. Two, I want to leave on a little bit of NBA attendance trivia because this just caught my eye when I was looking up that. Can you guys name the top three sellers of tickets on the road in the NBA? Two are obvious. One, I think you will be shocked at.
Golden State and the Lakers.
There you go.
You're saying it would be shocking, so I'm taking it not Houston or Oklahoma City.
Correct. The Dallas Mavericks. Luka Mania. Alive and well in this league. How about that?
Wow, you just identified something that marketing directors out there maybe should pay attention to. By the way, Luka had another triple-double last night. I think they lost, though. All right, well, Dave and Nick, thank you very much. Thank you to Andrew Hahn, who produced this, Kyrie in Bristol, who made it all happen, and to you for listening to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We will talk to you later this week.